And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Jason Miller, the Sorcerer. We're going to take your phone calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Jason Miller with us and your calls as we talk about sorcery and magic. Tell us a little bit more, Jason, about the magic. I mean, do you wear anything special, any kind of garb or anything like that?
I used to. I don't anymore unless there's a particular reason. So I'm for instance, I'm an initiated Nakpa, which I spent time in Nepal, and so if I'm at a Buddhist magical ceremony, I have a vow to wear these white robes. They're similar to a monk's robes, but with a white and red shawl and a white skirt. But in my house when doing magic, no, I don't wear anything special usually. I do usually have some kind of a talisman or two on me, both in the wallet, in the pocket, around the neck. Similar, I guess, to people all over the world, you know? And so these have different magical spells built into them that are designed to be ongoing. So protection, blessings, sweetening, make life a little bit easier, that kind of thing. But in general, I look like a pretty normal dude.
Okay, cool. And does magic work if you're a non-believer?
It does. Magic works fine if you're a non-believer. And this is one of the remarkable things, and it's not something that everyone who works magic agrees upon, but from what I have seen, from what I have observed over the last 30-some-odd years doing this, is that when people sit down with an open mind and say, even I'm going to see if this works, they can get a result from the magic, that there is something beyond just the power of belief at work.
What makes it work?
Oh, goodness. A combination of things. So there are spirits, and speaking to spirits, addressing them can make it work. There are certain protocols to get their attention. But there are also spells that can work through the power of the mind, concentration focused in a certain way. Energy of the body can do certain things. So a lot of magic, for instance, in India, you can find these texts about magical spells, but they all involve breathing and visualizations that are similar to what you might find in a yoga class, but then applied towards magic. So there are a number of different levels to how magic works. Similar to their, you know, you need gas to make your car work, but you also need electricity and other things. So these things can work alone or in combination to make magic.
Can you get hurt doing curses or spells?
I would love to say that you can't, but it's just like anything else. You can. Anything real usually has some element of danger in it, right? When we commute to work, there's some element of danger we might get hit by. I mean, we're riding around in metal boxes at ridiculous speeds. So we take normal precautions. We say, okay, you know, I'm gonna put on a seat belt, and I'm gonna buy the safest car I can, and I'm gonna follow the rules. But still, somebody might come and break one of the rules and smack into us, and there's not much we can do about it. If we're doing something particularly dangerous, like driving in a race, we'll put on extra protection, a helmet and padding, and we'll have a roll cage in the car. And so if we're doing magic that's particularly dangerous, then we take particularly strong precautions. So it would be wonderful to say that there's no danger to magic, but it would also not be true.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to Alberta in Austin, Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Hello, Alberta.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nori. I used to listen to you when you did your show in Minneapolis.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's telling my age, and it's still cold here, by the way.
It sure is.
I had a question, actually two questions, two quick ones for Mr. Miller.
Okay.
How are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing well, Alberta. Excuse me, I took a drink of water. It went down the wrong pipe. I'm doing well, Alberta. Thank you.
My birthday is January 26, 1963. And just for fun, me and a few friends of mine, we got these psychics to, you know, tell us our future and whatever. Several psychics, and I, you know, maybe one or two wouldn't have questioned it. But several, almost all of them I went to, were telling me that my birthday meant something biblical. And on that day, angels and all, you know, it was something big. And I was wondering if that was true, and how much stock do you put in psychics then?
Wow. Well, you stumped me. First of all, I should say, while I believe in astrology and I work with it within magic, I'm not an astrologer, so I'm not an expert in that aspect of magic in the field. So I don't know of any special biblical significance of that date or astrological significance of that date. But, you know, the test of these things is always, did it give you something meaningful and actionable? Did it explain anything for you in a real way? Or is it just sort of a mystery for you to chew on? So,
and she needs a numerologist.
Yeah, you need a numerologist. You need an astrologer to dig into that one. I'm so sorry.
I do know that date means that she's a born leader, Jason, whatever that means.
I bet you are.
So how about that? Good luck, Alberta. I hope everything works out for you. Let's go to Cindy in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Good to have you with us.
Yeah. My question is, can you tell if someone has had a spell or a curse placed on them?
There are a number of different ways to diagnose this. So the first thing that we look for is, what kind of symptoms are they having? One symptom alone, like I had a little run of bad luck after, say, a divorce, then you can look and say, well, people often have bad luck after a divorce.
Right, that's not unusual.
Your world is shaken up. If, however, you've had bad luck and snakes and spiders are appearing in the house and things are breaking in your hand and people completely not connected to the divorce are sort of turning their back on you, and you're having bad dreams, this could indicate some kind of, if not a curse, what we'll call a crossed condition. Because it's not always that some evil person has decided to do you ill, although it can be. There are also ways that people come across bad spiritual conditions by pissing off spirits, by doing something. I remember just having this horrible negative buildup of spiritual gunk by traveling this one area of the New Jersey Turnpike every day. And I went there to this intersection in the middle of the night. And it was this place that's still, like, it's, like, so, so busy. You can get across Midtown Manhattan faster than you can get across where the Turnpike and the Parkway intersect. And I did some divination, and I did some spirit walking there. And there were such angry, displaced nature spirits, right, at the impact on the environment. And so I made some offerings to kind of say, hey, you know, there's nothing I can do about this, but please let's go easy. You know, I'm not the cause of this. And so there are a lot of ways that people can get cross conditions. Divination is another thing that we want to look at. If you think you might have been cursed, then you want to go to somebody that you trust and have them read you. People read with cards, with runes, just psychic reading, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, sometimes people literally have a person that they know is a practitioner, that they know that they have fallen out with, and are worried that this person is hexing them. And sometimes that is, in fact, the case.
But it's interesting that you say the recipient doesn't necessarily have to know that it's happening. How do they know that something is happening on them, though? Do they start feeling something? Do they feel weird?
You know, very often you'll feel this. The first symptom might be something like you start to show up late everywhere you go. You're sort of out of sync with time. You used to be a person who was on time, and now you can't find your way to the normal rhythm that you used to have.
Huh.
And this ripples That's out weird. And it causes some other effects. Another thing to look at is plants, if you have plants around you. A lot of practitioners actually keep plants around them specifically to watch, because they will often take the magical hit and start to wilt and die if there's a curse placed upon you. So take a look at the house. Are there lots of phonic things, an increase in an invasion of ants that has never happened before? Not, oh my God, there's ants in the house.
Or flies or something like
right.
that?
You know, if there are flies and there's never been flies before, and suddenly there's an invasion, and it's coupled with all these, with several other things. So in other words, a constellation of these symptoms, not just one. And it has to be unusual. So if you're in the Northeast and in the fall you have cluster flies in your house, well, that's because you live in New England. It's not a curse. It's the curse of living in New England.
Jason, you talk about offerings to spirits. What kind of offerings, and then why?
Great question. So most of the world makes offerings to spirits. And this was God's spirits. This was religion for hundreds of years, including, biblical religion. You look at all the offerings to Jehovah that were made and so on. And so it's a way of connecting with the divine through making a physical offering. It's a way of connecting to lower spirits by literally feeding them something that they like. The offering, depending upon the spirit, can be water, can be incense, can be alcohol, can be tobacco, can be food, huge in Asian cultures.
But not sage.
Well, some spirits like sage. I'm not a big sage guy myself. I'm not a big smudging guy.
Right.
But it is, some people burn sage. I burn a lot of juniper, some pine. These are plentiful around where I live, too.
Let's go next to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hi.
I would ask you about the distant stuff where, you said you went to Nepal, that's a long way from here, but could you do stuff, or say from Nepal to here, or from Nepal to the Philippines, where it would have an effect in the distance, or in some way that's known or measurable?
I don't think distance has anything to do with it, Jason, does it?
It can. It depends on what you're doing.
Really?
So, for instance, it's hard to get a good link to someone if you are trying to bless someone that you don't know, right? One of the things that I would ask is, well, what do you have of this person? Can they sign something so that I have their signature? Now, of course, in the digital world, they can email me their signature, so I'll have that. But I still don't have the paper that they handled, that they put their own pen to. I don't have hair or something like that from them to work on, unless they mail it. And some people do that kind of thing, and international mail is really good. So distance can be a factor, but it isn't always. And there are different types of magic where that you can overcome the issues of distance. So right now, there are probably groups of practitioners, groups of monks doing, let's say, a Karukula puja. A Karukula is a Buddhist goddess of sort of attraction and love and witchcraft, etc. So there are probably a group of monks doing a puja, a ritual, to help somebody in England find a wife. This is a real-world example that I sat in on, that this gentleman from England had paid money for the monks to do this ritual for him a certain number of times. So distance isn't always a factor. It can be, though.
You talk about emergency magic is bad magic. What do you mean by that?
So the idea, when I was growing up, a lot of people used to say magic is something you do when everything else has failed. Like, magic is your last ditch. Nothing else works. I have to turn to magic. Right? And I always thought this was silly, because it's probably too late at that point to do something really constructive. Like, if your business is about to go under, magic isn't suddenly going to save it. It might help you mitigate the harm from going bankrupt, but it's not suddenly going to spin everything around and flood you with customers and make the banks turn a blind eye. But if you were to do magic early on, if you were to weave it in as part of your everyday what you do, then it can help you avoid ever having to run into that situation. Now, of course, we all run into emergencies. Some things are not within our control.
Sure.
In which case, magic can certainly help with those. But the idea is, we should then look at it afterwards and go, like, how did this happen? How could it have been prevented? How could I have worked some sorcery in with what I was doing to stop this? The other thing is about emergency magic is, sometimes we do magic not to move ourselves forward in life, but to keep the status quo. We're in a job we don't like. We're in a relationship we don't like. But all of a sudden, when that is threatened, people go into panic mode, right? It's not because they really loved what they were doing or who they were with. It's just their comfort zone is now being threatened.
Where do we get the books, Jason? Amazon?
You can get the books on Amazon. Your local bookstore is always my favorite place to get them. Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment with final phone calls with Jason Miller, the sorcerer, the magician, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jason, you've made a few biblical references, thanking a saint, as a matter of fact. How come?
Well, magic is no stranger to Christianity. And Christianity is no stranger to magic. There is just I can go around the corner and to the local Catholic church and buy a sell your house kit to St. Joseph.
Yeah, and you bury him.
You bury him, that's right. And you dig him up when your house gets sold. And this is a spell. I mean, we can call it prayer, but at the point that you're burying a statue of a saint and keeping him in darkness until he does what you want, I think it's reasonable to call it a spell. And so and you see this all over the world too. I mean, I remember attending a Buddhist ritual, and we were using a purba, the three-sided dagger, to you know, eliminate negative spirits. And somebody's like, I hope you don't think that this is voodoo or something. And I was like, yeah, it's actually, it's right on the money, actually. So it very often people think of magic and witchcraft as what other people do and what I do is religion. But that's not really the case. Everybody uses magic. And so being born Christian, I'm an interfaith person. And so I honor the saints. And in the book, I specifically thank Saint Cyprian, who has a wonderful history and is thought of as a sorcerer saint. He supposedly renounced his sorcery, became a bishop of Antioch, but this tradition developed for hundreds of years that he really didn't renounce sorcery. He combined it with Christianity, and that there are these books all throughout Iberia, throughout Portugal and Brazil and Peru and Mexico and so on, that are these Cyprian texts of magic. And so he's a big interest of mine and a spirit that has helped me a lot, and I wanted to thank him in a book as an offering.
All right, let's go to the calls again. We're going to a city of 4,500 plus, Georgia, Vermont. Kim is with us. Hey, Kim, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hey there.
I have a 400-year-old curse on our family.
Wow.
This jerk of my relative, he was back in Boston, and he was instrumental. He's right on Wikipedia. He's instrumental in killing witches and Quakers, and the last Quaker who was sentenced to death threw a damnation on him, and he did die, as the Quaker said he would. His brains were dashed out on the commons. His horse spooked and threw him. We all die alone, and our kids hate us. How do I get rid of this curse?
Wow.
That's a tough one, Jason.
That is a tough one. You know, old family curses are very difficult to break. Just ask the Kennedys. But there are ways. Obviously, I can't go too in-depth in just a few minutes on a radio show because it's a hard case. But I would seek out a local practitioner that you trust, and you're in Vermont, so there are not, you know, wonderful people in Massachusetts and so on. But there are ways that you can make offerings to appease any kind of negative spirits that remain from this curse, to distance yourself from that act, that original act that caused this ill, the burning of this Quaker, and make this known to the spirit world, and then to do different protections, and baths are usually instrumental in this, but old family curses can be a tough nut to crack for sure.
All right, hope that helps you. Get rid of that curse. My gosh. If you can't, then what happens? Do they get worse, Jason?
Well, old family curses don't necessarily get worse over time, but it's just like any other disease. If it's been with you a long time, it gets very difficult to get rid of, and so my heart sort of breaks for this woman. If you can't get rid of it, then things can snowball, especially with a new curse, a fresh curse, or one that's actively being worked on somebody. Then, yeah, if you don't take steps to reverse it, to protect yourself, then certainly things can just escalate and get worse, depending upon how bad the intended curse was.
All right, back to the calls. Daryl's in Louisiana. Welcome to the program, Daryl. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Jason.
Hey.
Thanks for taking
my
call.
Sure thing.
Listen, George, just before I have a question, I want to appreciate everything you bring to the show. It helps keep my mind active while I'm driving.
Thank you.
Jason, I've always been a student of all things esoteric, but have never been very ritual in my life. I've pretty much kept it mental. But having said that, I have dated some very witchy women in my life. Now, and most of them know me, and so coming from that mental aspect, they wouldn't approach me with anything really strong from the front. And I suspect that someone has snuck something in on me in a very subtle way that I didn't notice till his tentacles were everywhere. So what I'm asking at this point is, what is your best recommendation on how to reverse or send that energy back? Now, I don't want to go thermonuclear, maybe just a little thump on the forehead. I'll take the answer offline. Thanks.
Great. So, you know, this is somebody you've dated that has done something to you that you want to reverse. So the good thing is you probably have something of theirs, right? So you can take that item, that link, whatever it is, maybe a piece of old clothing or something that they gave you, whatever it is, and you name it as that person. And if you don't have something like that, then you can take a little doll or candle and you baptize it as that person. So you literally, this thing, I name you whatever this woman's name is. And then place it in a box that you put a mirror inside of. Try not to look into the mirror directly, but you get a little box at Michael's, whatever craft store is around you, and you glue some mirrors to every side of this box so that whatever it is reflected back upon them. This is just one method. Then I'm also heavily recommend baths for people that are non-ritualists themselves, right? So just like any other profession, if you've studied a long time, then you have rituals and that are more advanced than this. But if not, then I really recommend going to say Motor City Hoodoo or something like that and buying one of their protection baths and taking it for 9 to 13 days where you literally wash this stuff out.
How does that work?
Oh, well, this is wonderful old magic where you're taking this group of herbs that you're going to pray over and consecrate. But the herbs themselves have certain magic to them, right? This is old school pharmacia. And you bless it and the water, and then you can either get into a basin if you're really old school, or you can just do it in the shower. That's what I do. And you start at the head, and you wash yourself with this water that has been strained with this bath. One of my favorites is actually doesn't even involve herbs. It's a three salt bath. So saltpeter, sea salt, and Epsom salt. And you get into the shower, you wash with this gallon jug that has this in it, and you pray, or you recite a spell, or you chant, depending upon the tradition that you're from and the powers that you work with and believe in, you move that over you, and you let that carry the negativity off and away from you, down the drain, or if you do it in a basin, like I said, very traditional, then you do it in the morning, and you dump it out towards the rising sun.
Let's go to Diana in Ogdensburg, New York now. Welcome to the program, Diana. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Jason. Nice to meet you. But I have a little problem.
What's up?
Okay. I have a ghost from my past, one of my past lives, and he's an angry one. And I've had my girlfriend, she's a psychic, and I am too, but she read me and said, well, he's there. But my grandfather is protecting me. But how do I get rid of this guy?
Whoa.
I don't even know who he is.
Well, there are a few different ways to get rid of it. But so the first thing you want to do is, thank Grandpa. Leave a glass of water out for him. Maybe put his picture out. Put a little glass of water in front of him and maybe light a nice white candle for him to let him know from your end that you sense his protection over you and that you want to add a little bit of strength to that as well. So you think of this as him reaching down to you and you reaching up to him, right? Then depending, there are a few different ways you can do this with this old ghost. You can seek to elevate its spirit, where essentially you are doing magic to pray for this ghost to move on to a better world. There are different ways to do this, to light a candle low in the house and raise it every day and ask for this ghost to move on and leave you alone. But if it's very troublesome, if it's very angry, then you have to get more proactive about it. So then what you want to do is similar. You can do a protective bath, but immediately followed by a personal protection, a talisman or a ritual that you do every day to protect yourself. And then you go on and you do the same thing to the house. You want to cleanse the house. This is, again, bringing up a lot of people love sage. I love camphor blocks in the house to quiet spirits down. I love using Epsom salt fire to cleanse rooms. And then you protect the house. So you're working from yourself out. You protect your house, and then you set up protections on the outside of the house. And if you get my, I hate to say get my book, but there's a whole
book
of escalating things.
Nothing wrong with getting your book.
Well, you know, but it really is like a whole start here, and if that doesn't work, go to this. And if that doesn't work, then get even more serious and go to this.
I have you ever been scared doing sorcery or magic?
Yeah.
What happened?
I'll admit to that. Yes.
What happened?
Oh, man. You know, I have had scary psychic experiences that are difficult to recover from immediately. And you feel almost like your brain's not going to snap back to normal in a way that you'll be able to deal with reality very easily anytime soon. And so stuff like that has happened. I remember doing inner heat yoga, what in Tibet is called tummo. And I was doing this practice for a long time and hitting it very hard. It's forced breath and visualization and mantras and so on. And when I got done, I could not see across the room because the air was so thick with just white astral vision. I couldn't see literally to navigate my way through normal physical space. That's how far it put my physical senses into the astral. And it took a really long time to break up. And I was like, oh my God, you know, I've read of yogis having things like this happen and not coming back from it. So there are things that can happen that are scary. There are spirits that you can summon. There's a spirit I remember working, a very popular book of magic, usually referred to as the Goetia. Goetia is really a type of magic, so the Goetia of Solomon. And there was one spirit amongst these 72 that when it came through, the sense of malefica, of evil, was and just nothing good is going to come of this. Sort of like, okay, hello, you're here. All right, well, thanks, goodbye.
Yeah. It loomed all over the place.
Yeah, just don't ever come back, and I'm crossing this one off the list. Like, whatever I need, I'm going to find somebody or something else to get.
Scary times ahead. Jason, give out your website for us.
StrategicSorcery.net is where you're going to find my courses, my books, and All other things me.
Put a nice spell on us, would you?
I absolutely will bless everyone here.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate it. On our next program, as I mentioned earlier, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.